Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 197 of the It's Obvious podcast. My name's Garrett Drake, and I'm joined across the internet by Jacob Alka exclusively. Preston is missing once again. But good news, he's alive and well. I've spent time with him this past week. We miss him terribly, but he is profoundly, profoundly busy. But Jacob, it is wonderful as always to hear your voice over the internet and talking to you this evening. We apologize, obviously, for the podcast being a day late. I think it's actually coming technically, the whole day late. I apologize. I've just returned from London, England. I'm gonna stop rambling now. But Jacob, how are you?
I'm great, man. How you been?
Good. Sorry, I'm just kind of collecting all my thoughts because I have like 6,000 things to do this week as usual.
Yeah, I get it.
Many of them I have to get started on tonight post podcast. I'm trying not to stress about that. I'm trying to live in the moment. We are here doing the podcast, what we love. Ready to hear from all of you out there in the world. We miss you to bits. It's good to be back. Jacob, how was your past week?
It was good. It was good, man. Did a lot of cool stuff. I bought something cool and I tried some cool new things. What about you?
Jacob, that's really exciting, man. I traveled across the pond and back in a matter of 3 days and it was tremendously exhausting.
I bet.
It was an unforgettable experience to say the least. I'll go into details about some of my experiences there here in a little bit, but it was really, really cool. I can't disclose exactly what I was doing there yet. But come Wednesday or Thursday, I think Wednesday, I can talk more about that and all that news will come out about what I was doing. I think it's blatantly obvious what I was doing, especially if you follow me on Instagram, which I goofed. Some of the stuff I shared on Instagram was not allowed to be shared yet, but I misunderstood God. The embargo rules. So
you rookie.
That's funny is that it was actually a rule broken by several other people because there was a bit of a confusion there. But
yeah.
No big deal. Thankfully, there was just pictures, but it was super cool. I'm excited to talk more in depth about that, but I can't talk about the trip itself. But I'm honestly, Jacob, more interested in hearing some of these new things you tried this week. What were you doing exactly?
Sure. Unfortunately, this is all going to sound underwhelming because you just went to London, you know, so nothing's going to be as cool as that. But I don't know if we discussed these on the podcast. I don't think we did. I think we were just talking in person. But you suggested that I go try the Taco Bell orange cream pop freeze thing.
The orange cream, it's like the orange cream freeze, like orange and cream sickle.
It's like
freeze.
The popsicle you had when you're growing up. So tried that, was fantastic. Really recommend that. And I thank you for recommending me that yourself.
Oh, of course.
And then to follow up on that, I remember you talking about the Chick-fil-A key lime milkshake. And I was like, you know what? I'm having a good night. Just had some dinner. I'm going to go out and have a nice drive. And I went to Chick-fil-A and got one of those milkshakes, Garrett.
So you tried both?
Yes. Not the same night, of course, but same week. And that was even better than the orange.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was so good. And I'm not even like a huge key lime pie consumer, you know? Like I'll have it if there's nothing else. But I prefer like any other pie ordinarily. But this shake was... it was like perfect. And it was weird because like I took a sip and I didn't know if I liked it at first, but then I like kind of let it settle on the tongue and just, you know, savor the flavor. And it was delicious. The lime really stands out. It kind of tastes like lemonade too. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's made with, it's vanilla ice cream and like a key lime lemonade that they mix into it, which sounds absolutely disgusting, but it's delicious to me because it tastes mostly like vanilla ice cream, but there's just that subtle hint of key lime.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, that was the two new cool things that I tried this week.
That's exciting, Jacob. And also I'm thrilled that you tried both.
Yeah. And the same night, I actually... oh, yeah. The reason that I went out that night is because I was going to buy a new mouse. I mentioned this briefly on Discord because I was asking for opinions on a certain mouse that I was looking at. So I went to Best Buy and I checked to see if they had any of these in stock. Like I went on their website and checked the SKU number and whatnot. And they had it in stock. It is the Logitech G502, I believe it's called. And that is a mouse. I was kind of complaining about how my Razer mouse kind of, I just didn't like how it felt anymore. Like it's more of a palm grip. You understand what I mean when I say that, Garrett?
I do.
Like you literally rest your palm on it. And like I've never done that, so I've always had my palm hanging off the mouse, so it's just never felt right to use. And I just wanted to try a different style of mouse. And so I've been using this new Logitech mouse for a couple of days now, and it's really awesome. I really like it. And it's like one of those mice that you buy and it comes with weights. So you can like open up the bottom and put different weights in. You can distribute them at different parts of the mouse too. So it kind of like lets you customize how you want your mouse to feel, where you want it to be a little more weighty, or you can just put no weights in. I mean, whatever you want. But I mean, the thing is, it's really comfortable. Even the scroll wheel, like it has different settings. You can set it to like scroll a little bit, or it can just be like an endless scroll by just clicking a button. It has like six buttons on it, and they're like strategically placed. They're all within reach, within like the index finger or the thumb. It's just a really nice mouse. I'm not using my face cam right now, so I can't show you, Garrett, but just take my word for it. I know it's a favorite in the gaming community, but it is a nice mouse, and I'm excited to fiddle around more with it this week.
What's the exact name of it?
The Logitech G502.
All right, cool. Well, yeah. That's pretty exciting about the weights, considering you know all about weights.
Oh, you're damn right I do.
Yeah, you were really turning me on this week with some of those posts you shared on social media.
Yeah, I plan on keeping them coming, at least a couple.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jacob. I know the entire world appreciates when you share a tad bit of your physique.
You think?
Out there in the internet. Oh, yeah, Jacob. I mean, I, for one, of course, live for those photographs, so please keep them coming. But I'm glad to hear that you tried some delicious, sugary, frozen treats this week, and you acquired a new mouse that you're really into.
Yes. I had a good week. Man.
Yeah. Anything else go on in your week?
You
laid some sod one day. I know that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I forgot about that. Over the weekend, I helped my parents lay some sod down because I think they installed a new sprinkler system and they needed a lot of, you know, the grass was dug out to put it in. So they wanted to replace it all and make the yard look nice again. So helped them with that. And
you're a good boy, Jacob. That's very courteous of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else that happened this week? I don't think anything too crazy. I got sick. Actually, I got allergy sick for a couple of days. It was like Thursday through Saturday. It kind of sucked. It was funny because like when the pollen first started, you know, doing what it does in the spring here, like I wasn't really like getting sniffling or anything. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm kind of getting over this whole pollen thing that I get every year. Then little did I know, like a couple days later, you know, I didn't knock on wood and I got like I couldn't breathe. Like my throat was sore, like it was just destroying me. And it put me out of commission. Like I was going to stream that Thursday, but I just couldn't stop coughing and sneezing. So kind of had to cancel that. And it just kind of, you know, it was a bad way to end the week. Not ideal for sure, but I'm over it now. Feel a lot better. And yeah, that's mainly all that really happened for me this week.
All right. Well, I'm glad you bounced back from your allergic illness.
Yes.
And you're prepared to podcast at the very least.
Damn pollen.
I appreciate you being here, not bailing on it like you bailed on your very avid followers now that you're over 100. Is that correct? I think 108 last time I checked.
Yeah. Really exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, man. Congrats. I'm really proud of you for reaching that milestone. I know, obviously, we've reached a handful of milestones through It's Obvious Gaming. So hitting 100, obviously, is... probably a pretty cool feeling doing it all solo.
Yeah. I mean, well, you make it sound bad there.
No, I didn't mean it like that. I mean, like for real, because you've done that all on your own, which is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I mean, to be honest, the last like 10 followers I got were all on Sunday when I used our It's Obvious Gaming Facebook to basically advertise myself.
Okay. Plugging yourself on the old IOG channel, are you?
Like, I don't know why I never thought to do that.
Mooching off It's Obvious Gaming. I see. You can't just do your own thing. I get that, Jacob. Feel free to use it anytime you like because I don't use it myself for anything. So,
of course,
start plugging my sewing company I'm starting. I'm really getting into sewing.
I wish we could change that, though. I miss doing our Let's Plays. Those were some good times.
Jacob, I miss those so often. If I only had the time to contribute to making those, I would do that all the time.
Yeah.
That's what's sad.
Can you imagine
is that,
like us playing RE2? Like,
oh, I know. I know. We would have had just an absolute blast doing that. Yeah. And it's even better now to do a lot of online stuff because we all have PCs, but I can't touch video games to save my life because I'm so busy. Obviously, I got to quit saying that because I'm just drilling it into people's heads over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I'll say it once and for all. I'm just too busy to play games right now.
Sad face.
Yeah, which obviously I have plenty to show for that with the stories I tell this week. But I'm proud of you, Jacobs. What I'm trying to say about you reaching that milestone, I think it's awesome.
Yes. And it's just been fun. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, just doing the streaming solo has inspired me just to be more active on social media. And it's just been fun kind of learning that I kind of enjoy posting on social media, because up until like this year, I didn't really do it. You know, like I always enjoyed reading other people's shit on social media, but I never considered that I had something to say myself, you know. So it's just been kind of cool learning that. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The only social media I am pretty fairly active on daily is Instagram, just because I really love taking pictures of things.
I mean, it is the best one, to be fair.
Yeah, I love Instagram. It's great. And I mean, I predominantly just look at other people's stuff on there, but I tend to post pictures on there pretty regularly, mostly on stories, but every now and then I'll post actual pictures.
Yeah. I mean, you were pretty active while you were in London. It was nice seeing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I was doing that all illegally, technically. unbeknownst to me that I was doing that.
Well, let's hear more about anything you saw in London. I told you my week.
So I'm not going to ramble too long about this. I'll kind of just talk about sort of the highlights from the trip. But the trip itself was pretty unbelievable. I've always wanted to travel to the UK. Granted, this was purely focused on providing content for COD Connected through Microsoft, which I am super grateful and honored to have done, as always. And it was very little time to explore, unfortunately. Some of the pictures I posted earlier today on Instagram were just from about an hour I spent walking, literally walking around the corner from my hotel that I was staying at in Birmingham, England, which is another city in England. I believe it's roughly northwest of London, if I'm not mistaken, if I looked on a map. But it was also full of some really cool spots to visit, which I'll talk about here in a minute. But I was going to start by talking about British Airways, which this is actually pretty funny. They're just British. I think the highlight of the trip overall is just English courtesy was just immaculate while I was there. I mean, maybe this isn't like most people that live there, like most Brits. I can't vouch for them. But in my experience, the 3 days I spent in England, everyone was just so courteous and polite and had great manners all the time.
And great accents.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal accents. All different variations of British accents, too. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but it's almost like the stereotypical accents that we Americans do as British folk are almost spot on. It's amazing. I think it's because we've seen so much Harry Potter that it wasn't a surprise to me to hear some of the accents. But
yeah. We're getting good.
Yeah. The first encounter I had with a native was on British Airways. One of the flight attendants had come by about halfway through our flight. I was like, I just want to say you have been so polite. It's been such a breath of fresh air. And I was like, great. And I was like, I'm glad to hear that. But I headed off one of the flight attendants. So that was fun. I was miraculously never offered tea once in the 3 days I spent in England.
What?
And I'll get back to this guy, but a gentleman named Ian, who was a British guy who sat next to me on the flight home, was just appalled by that news. He's like, no, he's like, you were in London for 3 days and went off for tea once. He's like, that doesn't make any sense at all. He's like, you didn't experience like London itself. He was freaking out, but
you got to go back.
Yeah, I was offered coffee a ton, but no tea once, surprisingly. But anyway, I get there and I thought I was going to London originally, but I was just a lot of the details came to me at the very last minute about where exactly I was going. And so I passed through London to get to Birmingham, and then I passed through London again on the way back. And funny story about being in London, I was so excited to be there at what was it? It was a Euston Station, I believe, is the station in London, if I'm not mistaken, the train station. So, I mean, this whole trip was planes, trains, and automobiles to get to where I was going. I mean, I took a plane to get there, took a car to get to the train station, took a train, then took another car to get to the hotel.
I wish that's how this, you know, America was.
And then I took another vehicle to get to the final destination about what the trip was actually for. Yeah. But so it was a total journey, and all of it was super smooth and well orchestrated by Microsoft, and it was awesome. But or the PR company that took care of it. So the whole just getting to where I was going was awesome. So I could just really take in all the sights and not have to worry about getting from point A to point B, having to worry about getting to certain places on time, because it's all just kind of ready for you. But I blew it, because when I get to Euston Station in London, I'm so excited to be there that I just start running around the station taking pictures of stuff. And I lost track of time and wind up missing my train.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, oh, dang it. So I go to the ticketing station to see if I can just afford another ticket, like the next train to Birmingham. And the tickets are just unbelievably expensive. So I was like, holy crap, I got to figure something out. Now, granted, the company would have helped me acquire a new one, but I kind of wanted to take care of it on my own.
Yeah.
So I go up to this ticketing counter and this lady's standing there who clearly works for the station. I was like, excuse me, ma'am, I lost track of time and managed to miss my train. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to possibly catch the next one with the same ticket. And she goes, oh, of course, love. You just need to go downstairs and talk to this something like I can't remember what the title of this person was, but something yeah. in this booth downstairs next to the actual platforms. Sorry about the train. You can probably hear my audio right now. It's very obnoxious.
I didn't know you lived by a train.
Yeah, I do. It's directly behind my apartment complex.
It sucks.
It's not too bad because I'm a pretty heavy sleeper, but it can be obnoxious when you're recording a podcast, obviously. But anyway, so she tells me to go talk to this person. I'm like, okay, well, what should I say when I get there? And she goes, she just smiles and she goes, just use your charm, love. I was like, what? She's like, just use your charm. I was like, so go down there and just be nice to her. She goes, yes, just use your charm. Just go down there and be nice. I was like, all right.
I want to go so bad.
Yeah, I go down to the station where she told me to go. And this, I was just really, really polite to this lady and told her what had happened. She goes, okay, you're going to go to platform 4. The train leaves at 8:30 and you can go through that gate there. I was like, thank you, ma'am. I am a stupid American. So I naturally made my way to platform 9 3/4 and caught my train to Birmingham. But the train was awesome too, man. I had a first class seat on this train. I actually posted a picture on Instagram on my story one day. It was really pretty of like the English countryside you see all the way to Birmingham and come by, offer you coffee and food and stuff. It was very much like obviously being on a plane, but it was a train car, which I hadn't been on a train since I was very young. So it was kind of cool to have that experience. And naturally, I pretended like I was on the Hogwarts Express riding through the English countryside. But that was super cool. I get to Birmingham, and the only really cool experience I had in Birmingham, aside from just walking around taking a couple pictures, I went into a tiny little pub there, and I copped out and got a Stella pint because I'd heard the horror stories that English beer is just awful.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll get a Stella because I've had Stella and it's not too bad. So I get a pint and naturally, since, you know, I'm like, when in Rome, I gotta show people I'm having a pint in England.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a picture of it. And this guy behind me is like, hey, mate. I turn around and he goes, how about a pic with your pint? And I was like, sure. So I hand him my phone. He starts taking pictures of me. He goes, do you mind taking a couple pictures of me and my mate here? Like, I'm like, sure. So they hold up their pints and I start taking pictures of them. He goes, I see you like taking pictures. I was like, yeah. And he goes, if you like taking pictures, you should come to Liverpool. He's like, you'll be taking pictures every 5 minutes. It's beautiful. I was like, cool.
I thought that was going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, these two guys were from Liverpool and just were going on and on about how beautiful Liverpool was and that I should go there and take pictures there. And we ended up talking about all kinds of stuff, and they were asking about what I was doing there and where I was from. And me and one of the guys hit it off because he said he was taking his wife and kids to Disney World in Orlando in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, you were talking to the right guy. I freaking love Disney World. So it was like me and these two English blokes just hitting it off, enjoying our pints, talking about Disney for an hour.
Yeah.
But it was like what I would imagine to be a pretty typical pub experience in England. So that was pretty awesome to have that.
Seems like everyone was so friendly.
I told you, man, everyone I encountered was just really awesome. I mean, maybe I just got lucky. I don't know if it's like that every day there, but it was super jolly.
Class, you know?
It was a very jolly place everywhere I went.
Yeah.
So what's something else? Because I can talk about the rest next week when all the coverage comes out that I'll be there for.
Yeah, but I just mean like what you can.
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm trying to think of anything else London and or Birmingham related.
I've heard Birmingham's like a, you know, it's not London, obviously, but it's a pretty well-known city, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I've heard of it.
Uh-huh. It was pretty cool. Everyone I talked to that either lives there or is from there, like the guy in the plane on the way home, Ian, who I was talking to, was from Birmingham. He said he hates it there because the internet's so bad. I was like, sorry, man. But the funny thing about Ian is that he was traveling to Atlanta to work with a buddy of his at some conference where they construct sort of like the beams that hold up different booths.
Okay. And
they do it annually. So that's what he's headed there for. And this guy was telling me he was a classic Brit in the sense that he'd been an alcoholic since he was 12. I don't know if that's the case for everyone, but that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And he was asking for rum just over and over and over and over and over again. This is a 9-hour flight, mind you. And he's been drinking for like four of the 9 hours so far. And at one point, one of the flight attendants comes by and he goes, "Hey, can I get another rum?" And they're like, "You've drunk us dry, mate. You've drunk us dry." Like, "There's no more rum, but we have whiskey." He's like, "All right, I'll take a whiskey then." So he starts drinking whiskey over and over. And this guy's drinking for like 6 hours straight. And he just gets completely plastered sitting next to me on the plane. So me and my new bloke, Ian, my new mate, Ian, just talk about everything you can imagine for like 2 hours straight because he just can't stop talking. And I didn't want to be mean. So I talked to this guy for 2 hours on the flight. And he told me he was really into motocross and BMX, and he showed me all these scars he had from like breaking limbs and everything. So he was just a funny guy, and it was just kind of interesting to have a conversation with someone who had lived in the UK their entire lives. And we actually got on the subject of food at one point. I'm like, "How do you feel about the food in America?" He's like, "Oh, you have the worst food in the world, mate. It's disgusting." I'm like, "What's so gross about it?" I'm like, "We have like every genre you can imagine." He goes, "It's too greasy and cheesy."
Did you just say every genre?
Yeah, every genre of food. And he said it was too greasy and cheesy. I'm like, "Well, you're probably not wrong there. A lot of our food is very greasy and very cheesy. And if I'm being honest, that's like the majority of my diet is greasy and cheesy, unfortunately." But I told him, I was like, "Man, I could recommend so many good places to you in Atlanta alone that you'd probably like that is not overly greasy and cheesy." But I let him try my pretzels because he'd never tried pretzels before.
Okay.
And he literally spit it out when I gave it to him. He's like, that's straight cardboard, mate. That is cardboard. Throwing back whiskey. But he thought it was disgusting. And it was just a really interesting experience on the way home. But the bulk of my cool stories have to do with what I was there for, which I can talk about starting Wednesday and next week in the podcast. But it was overall just, an unbelievable experience. Here's an interesting fact. This is kind of funny. It's what I'll end on for my London trip for now. Two things. I used my Visa credit card to pay for everything while I was there because originally I like an idiot, I exchanged US dollars for euros and the currency was pounds where I was. Oh. So like a total moron, I'm carrying euros around that are useless. So I'm using my credit card for everything, which is fine. But every time you pay with a credit card there, they make you sign a receipt, which happens from time to time here in the United States as well. But they take the signatures, at least where I was, very seriously.
Yeah.
And I learned that because in America, I'm used to just scribbling nonsense on like a receipt or just anything. And that's what I did when I signed a receipt. And they're like, "All right, we need to see your form of identification so we make sure the signatures match." I was like, "Oh, crap." So I hand them my driver's license that are clearly not even remotely correct.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Sir, your signature does not match the one on your ID." Like, "We need to make sure this is your card." I'm like, "Well, my name's on the card. My name's on the ID." So I had to go through this whole debacle for like 2 minutes about explaining that I'm used to just scribbling my signature on things. But so they take signatures really seriously there, which I thought was interesting. But
yeah.
Lastly, I thought it was funny about Ian complaining about the food here when I was sort of complaining about the food there, because not everything, but a lot of the stuff I tried was like food here, just tweaked in very weird ways.
Yeah.
For example, they'd be like, "A pepperoni pizza. That could use some carrots." Like pepperoni pizza with like carrots on it. What is this?
Yeah, what is that?
And there was something else that was really bizarre that was just, that didn't belong on whatever it was. But the other one that stuck out to me is that I get to a Starbucks at one point and I was so desperate for something other than just a weird dish I'd been having. I saw that they had a cinnamon roll and I was like, "Well, I love cinnamon rolls. That's super normal. You can't mess up a cinnamon roll."
Yeah.
So I bite into the cinnamon roll after ordering it. It's packed full of raisins.
Oh.
Like, what the hell?
What?
Cinnamon roll. That could use some raisins, mate. I had multiple things there that were like what you would have here, just tweaked in a very bizarre way for some reason.
Yeah.
But the most normal meal I had was at a steakhouse following the event that we had gone to at the game studio. And I had just a normal filet rare steak that was amazing. And I had I think it was called a chocolate orange cocktail, like a chocolate orange bourbon. It was really, really good. But I had that steak. I had fries that were not called chips, surprisingly. They were just called fries.
Interesting.
And a really amazing mac and cheese at this restaurant. So that was the most normal meal I had. And aside from that, I just pounded back Oreos and pretzels to fill up all the other times.
Yeah, yeah.
But overall, super cool trip. Everyone I encountered was amazingly friendly. It's amazing. I mean, though very brief, I wish I'd had more time to explore London specifically. I know it's huge. You'd probably need a month to explore all of London, but what little I saw of it was fascinating. And I hope to return to the UK, hopefully in the near future for something. because it was just super cool and I loved it. So that was my week in London. But aside from that, I did go to a show with Preston this weekend. He and I hadn't hung out in a while. We went to see Veil of Maya at the Masquerade in Atlanta. And it was a pretty groovy show. They were great as always. I think it was our third time seeing them.
Nice.
And the only other band that really stuck out to me was a band called Intervals, which is an instrumental metal band that opened for them. And they sounded really awesome, too. There's no really better way to describe them than just they're a really good metal instrumental band. But which I've heard a few of those in the past, but Intervals music specifically was pretty awesome when they opened for them. So that was a pretty cool band, too.
So no vocals.
No vocals. It was, I mean, they would talk in between songs and stuff, but it was purely music while they were playing.
That's cool.
Very technical, of course. I feel like when you're in a band like that, you kind of have to be technical for it to be interesting, but really solid tunes. Speaking of metal, I shot a portion of a metal video today for the music video class. I mean, I think I mentioned it last week. Miraculously, I booked the band, which is a miracle in and of itself. They all showed up on time. They were all super enthusiastic.
Wow.
And we shot it at the school, and it was really awesome. Now, the only stress part of this experience was that not only do we have the room that we booked at the school for a very brief amount of time, but it pissed off the faculty because I guess I didn't tell them that we're going to have a metal drummer going to town on his drum kit in this room. And, dude, faculty burst in, and they were so freaking pissed. They're like, we have classes going on right now. I was like, sorry, man. We're just getting lit in here, dude. It's so heavy. But we were blasting their song, too, so the drummer could hear it. So just imagine, like, this horrific metal song blaring throughout the hallways of school. And there's, like, a guy banging on his drums in the middle of, like, your drawing class or something.
Right.
But it was pretty funny. But it went pretty well. We had to rush everything because I had to go downstairs and deal with that whole debacle and explain what we were doing. So that it ate up a lot of our time, me having to deal with that. So we kind of had to rush most of the shoot. But I think what I got is going to work really well in tandem with the rest that we shoot later this week. But so that's cool because I'm really excited to work on that because I've always wanted to shoot a metal music video. Granted, I'm not being able to spend as much time on it as I would like because of, you know, issues always arise with stuff like this. But I think when it's all said and done, it'll be pretty cool. And I'm glad that I got to work with the local band. They're called Mirthless. And I met them because I think I mentioned this last week, too, but I ran sound for them a year ago at Smith's Old Bar. And I just thought they were really impressive live. And their current album they have out is called Familiar Shelter. You can listen to it on like Spotify and iTunes. Really solid. And we shot a video today for one of their singles off their new record, which comes out later this month. So I'm kind of honored to be doing that for them as well, which is cool. So That's what I did today. I think that kind of caps my entire week. But I think the highlight of all of it, aside from having an amazing trip across the pond, is that I miraculously, thanks to my father, acquired two tickets to what may be, hopefully not, but may be the Ghost Inside's last show ever.
Ooh.
Which I originally wanted to acquire tickets for about a month ago when they first went on sale. But I, even with alarm set on my phone, I had forgotten because I was shooting something that day and was so busy that I forgot to go on and buy them in time. So I was convinced that I was not going to be able to attend the show, which is taking place in Los Angeles in July. Oh. And so I'll be traveling for the show, too. And I have an extra ticket, so I got to find someone to go with me. If no one wants to go with me here, someone who lives in L.A. who's a Ghost Inside fan, you're welcome to join me. I'll keep you posted on that news. But my dad actually bought them for me because I was on the plane ride home hitting it off with Ian while the tickets went on sale. So my dad went on, and they were – I think they were resale, but they were legitimate resale. So it wasn't like sketchy or anything. It was through their website.
Yeah.
But they were each like $175 a piece or like $200 or something. It was really expensive. I was not expecting that at all. But I think considering that they're my favorite band and have impacted me musically the most out of any other band, and the fact that it may be their very last show makes that price well worth it. So
sure.
Yeah. And just a chance to travel out west again, just to do something other than work for once, I think is really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so I'm pretty pumped about that. But my week was pretty jam-packed, and this one's even busier. But it was a really awesome week. I'm glad to be back and talking to you on the It's Obvious podcast, my friend.
Nice, man. Well, we can jump right into, you know, the news if you want.
I think we should do that. I don't think I'm leaving anything else out that's dire, but
yeah. I've just been playing the same stuff. We don't really have to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. I can talk about what I played this week a little bit. Okay. I can't. What I mainly played, I can't talk about yet, obviously, but I did dabble in Sekiro for about 5 seconds.
Okay.
Because Preston was over and I wanted to see what he was made of because he's now beaten the game 3 times.
Yeah.
And he's a master of the combat now because he just has it nailed down. He's practiced so much.
Yeah, I made some good progress this week in the game.
Oh, that's good. That's good. He beat two bosses for me, not because I wanted him to, but I just was curious to see what he could do.
Yeah.
So, Lord willing, if I ever have time to play games again, which won't be anytime soon, but when I do, I have every intention of not only finishing my current playthrough, but playing through it again and beating it all on my own, because I don't want to be like, yeah, I played the whole game, but pressed a beat for my bosses.
Yeah.
But yeah, he definitely knows what he's doing. It was very impressive, but I did technically play Sekiro for about 5 minutes and watch Preston play the rest.
You're always watching Preston.
Yep, I've been doing that my whole life since I met him, so it's nothing new.
What was I going to say? So which bosses did he kill?
He killed Lady Butterfly. He killed some other bastard Genichiro? At the top of a tower.
The lightning?
No, I killed Genichiro. I killed a lot of some of the main bosses. I killed Genichiro. I killed that armored guy in the bridge. I killed the drunken bastard. I killed several others, but
a couple of those are mini bosses.
Yeah, those are all side bosses, but
yeah.
Like he killed Lady Butterfly and a couple other side bosses for me just to show me what he was made of, and he definitely proved himself.
Yeah.
Did I fall in love with him? Possibly, but
what?
That's neither here nor there, my friend.
I thought you were in love with me.
Dude, just drop it. Don't worry about it. You got anything else to say before we jump into the news?
Not anymore.
Yeah, I'm out of here,
bastard.
Pal.
No, I don't.
Okay, let's do it. Oh yeah, I got to do the thing. This is the It's Obvious podcast where my best friends and I gather every single week to discuss video games and more. If you like what you're hearing, you can listen to it on a multitude of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Audio Boom, YouTube, and many more. And we encourage you to, of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel. I mean, I say subscribe to the YouTube channel because that'd be cool, but there really is no point right now unless you want to just watch the video version of this podcast, which we haven't done in weeks because our schedules keep conflicting, or I forget something like an idiot. Like this week, I forgot. It's either I forget the camera. This past week, I forgot a cable. And the week before that, I forgot something else. And it's not because I don't thoroughly check the bag I have taking stuff over there. I'm just so exhausted. And I had just returned from London before we were going to shoot this. And I had worked that morning. I slept for like an hour and it was at the church that morning and it was total chaos. So I couldn't keep up with everything and I was just super tired. So I blew it again. That's why we're a day late, unfortunately. I hope you can forgive me. But typically there is a video version, so that's why you can go to YouTube, and any of the other platforms are purely there for convenience. So join us there if you're willing. And of course, comment down below on either YouTube or any of our I guess you can only comment on YouTube. Reach out to us via email or on Discord if you guys want to chat about anything. And, of course, submitting questions for the Ask IOGs segment of this podcast.
And you can leave reviews on iTunes. Wink,
you can.
Wink.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to reiterate that at the end. But on Apple Podcasts, we still would love for you guys to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whenever you have a chance, because it really helps us out. And we're still wanting to grow this podcast. And we aren't able to contribute as much time to it as we were able to in the past, but we still try to do it as consistently as possible every week, and I think we're doing a fairly decent job considering our busy lives. But as always, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We are stoked that you're here with us. Jacob, let's jump into the news. You ready for this?
Yes, daddy.
Okay, I'm waiting for the tagline.
Hey man, what's the news?
It's not even remotely necessary, but I appreciate it every time. Jacob, you and I have both read, or at least I've read, every single word of Jason Schreier's BioWare piece that he wrote about the production of Anthem. Have you read it in its entirety or just
bits? I've not read it in its entirety because it is insanely long and I didn't realize
it is. It's like reading a short novel.
I know the gist.
Yeah. I think that's what is great about Jason Schreier. Why I admire him is because not only is he just a phenomenal investigative journalist in the games industry, but every word he writes is there for a reason. He doesn't ramble. He doesn't fluff anything. It is all very concise, very well written, very structured, and tells the story in a very understandable, clear way.
Yes.
And that's why I really appreciate him as a writer. And I think, honestly, he and Highlight Reel are the saving grace, and Tim Rogers are probably the saving graces of Kotaku, because I'm not a fan of much of their other writing. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I'm wondering when he's going to go beyond Kotaku, because he's had his work in New York Times. He's written a book now that I highly recommend, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. I know a few people from the community got around to reading it as well. But if you're even remotely interested in the games industry or even just drama behind game studios or the way games are made, it is super informative and entertaining and enlightening. And it works in tangent or works alongside this piece he wrote about BioWare in particular, that I almost feel like would make it's too long for a chapter, I'd say, but that's exactly why I'm hoping he makes a follow up to Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, because it was just fascinating to read about how many, many studios all face similar issues, but a lot of times very different issues. But in this case, a classic example of a studio not only being potentially overworked. I'm not going to say anything that I don't fully understand. From what I've read, it sounds like BioWare was basically choked out by EA trying to get this game done in a specific way, but also because of a lack of leadership.
It's also just BioWare itself too, though, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously their leadership has struggled in recent years, and it's been a lot of changes going on there. And even their core team that worked on Mass Effect is not exactly what it was when those games were being developed. So that studio, I mean, there are three locations eventually, obviously. I'm not going to reiterate the entire article because it's gigantic, but long story short, BioWare struggled immensely to get Anthem completed on time for release. And according to the article, they spent the last, I think, a year or maybe just slightly over a year, maybe even less. I think they said maybe the last 8 months was when the game actually came together into what it was at launch, which is just horrifying to consider. And they were in pre-production for like 5 or 6 years, which is just unbelievable. I mean, can you imagine spending 5 or 6 years of your life on a single project and then it comes out and people just really aren't that into it? I mean, I know some people are, but the vast majority of people just don't like it very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, they claim that they're going to continue evolving it, improving it, and I'm sure their whatever core fan base they currently have will enjoy that and appreciate it. And hopefully for their sake, it draws more people in the long run. Because I have openly admitted I played through the tutorial of Anthem and I was instantly bored. And I don't even think it was because it's bad. It's just something about it that was just – it was not – it didn't show me or make me feel anything even remotely unique in comparison to other looter shooters, for example, I've played in the past. So – I mean, that's how I felt about the tutorial, at least, so I can't vouch for the full game. But I've heard it's had a lot of issues out the gate that they're still addressing. And it's to be expected considering the revelation we've come to know through Jason's piece on this. So I definitely recommend reading it. But Jacob, I specifically obviously want to bring it up just to address it and that it's out there and hear from the community. But I wanted to hear from you, too, what your thoughts are on all this, because we've kind of talked about stories like this in the past. But this one's definitely pretty big considering it's coming from a major studio like BioWare right off the tail of Mass Effect Andromeda, which is also a disaster. Now, thankfully, Anthem isn't a total disaster, but it's not perfect by any means.
Right off the tail of Dragon Age Inquisition, actually, because if you read a little more into the article, it talks about Inquisition and how, like, it won Game of the Year when it came out, right? And how, like, everyone was loving the game, and, like, apparently that, like, kind of sent this roller coaster on its course, you know, like because of how that game, like it was also rushed, just like Andromeda and apparently Anthem was rushed. And that kind of like gave the studio the impression that that's how they needed to pump out games. And like that's then they talk about, like, or Jason talks about how that, like, that's kind of, you know, where it all started. And it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, like I didn't enjoy Inquisition and I didn't play Andromeda, and I did play Anthem. And it's funny, like, looking back on playing Anthem, like, I tried to convince myself that I liked it. I really did. And it has some great things. Like, Anthem itself, it's an okay game. It's definitely has a lot of problems, for sure. But you can kind of just tell, like, looking back on Anthem, it just kind of seems like it's all pieced together just to make a finished product, which, you know, that's what you should do, right? But it's just feels like all the pieces are just, they don't belong together. Like, I'm gonna bring this up again, the open or the first person hub world just doesn't, like, I don't know, it just doesn't match the gameplay. Like, they just seem like two completely different experiences, and they don't, you know, they don't mix well, at least in my eye. Like, it just seemed like you go out and, you know, you have fun, you fly in the mechs, you do all that, whatnot. Then you come back and you're forced to like walk through the slow town. You have to move so slowly through it. And you have to go talk to all these NPCs to get any sort of story or progress your quests. It was just a mess, like, looking back on it. And, like, I can't imagine, like, how they pumped this game out. Like, what, they made the actual game into what it is in the last year or something? Like, that's, right. Like, so they spent all this other time just conceptualizing, or I guess arguing with EA, whatever they were doing, just trying to think of what this game was actually going to be. And it seems like they never actually came up with a, you know, an actual plan for the game. It was just stuck in, you know, hell for so long.
Right.
And it's kind of sad. Just the whole article's sad, but I mean, I'm glad that it was written. It really shines a light on a lot of the problems that not only EA has, but a lot of studios making games, you know. It's not an easy industry by any means.
Yeah, definitely not.
That's why a lot of depression for their employees, apparently.
Yeah, post, of course, we had heard rumblings of stories like this, especially with the rise of social media. These stories have just come more and more common amongst studios. And post reading Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, and even obviously, especially after articles like this one, it's definitely made me appreciate, as much as I can, developers just pouring their hearts and souls into these projects, and even ones that are just doing it for the sake of a paycheck. I just have a new admiration and appreciation for their hard work, because it is just grueling. And especially when I'm at, whether it be a specific event for an exclusive game, or say E3 or PAX, whenever I speak to even indie devs, I try to go out of my way to thank them for, well, even if I don't even really like what I'm playing, I still thank them for their work, because I can't even imagine having to deal with that kind of crap on years on end, and talking about employees taking month long or longer vacations to just like clear their head from all the stress.
Yeah.
So that's pretty wild. But I found it interesting too that he said that many developers reached out to him after this article came out and said, you know, you could replace BioWare with our studio, and it's the exact same story, which is pretty horrifying. And I hope it doesn't, I doubt it will, because obviously things are going to change and get better, I imagine, because this is becoming more and more of an issue, and people are being very vocal about it. And we've seen that more often than not, especially in the games industry, it seems like people tend to make strives to make changes when necessary, when people are legitimately concerned about something. So I'm sure this culture will shift over time. So I was hoping it wouldn't discourage current up and coming game developers or aspiring game developers to pursue that career path, because I don't have time to play games as often as I used to, but I still adore them and love the art of it and the craft of it. And just having these experiences takes a lot of hard work and a ton of effort and heart and soul. And hopefully the industry, for everyone's sake, especially obviously the people working on it, but even for gamers' sake, that they can reach a point where they can create these games in a way that isn't just killing them.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine, because, I mean, think about how demanding it is to make a game like The Last of Us Part Two. Like, how long has it been in development? I imagine not long after Uncharted 4 launched.
Sure.
Even probably pre-production before that, and then the final product, like everything it takes just to make that game what it is.
Mm-hmm. Hey, just ask a Square Enix. They'll tell you how long it takes to make a game.
It's crazy, and just the budgets of them. And then there's so much. I mean, there's a lot of it I don't understand, honestly. But this read was interesting. And of course, Casey Hudson, former head of BioWare, I think he tweeted or wrote something in response to this, saying that, I mean, it was fairly obvious. He was just saying, we need to make changes, and this is how it is, and it can't stay this way or something. I didn't read the entire thing, but
yeah, apparently like the BioWare's response to Jason was pretty, you know, kind of rude.
I think it was EA that responded.
I think it was BioWare. I don't think it was EA. Let me find it.
Because I know whoever it was said something like, we don't like to trash each other in our work and something, something, something. But it was an odd response, that's for sure.
Hold on, I'm searching for it. Why can I never find something that I want, Garrett? There's a Polygon article. Yeah, just forget it. I'll find it. Just keep going.
One sec. Tell me something funny while I send this very important text. One second.
God, you're putting me on the spot. I want to find this tweet, though. Or maybe it's on BioWare's website. No, I'm not going to do that. Oh, well, here's like a little excerpt from it. I can read some of this. As a studio and a team, we accept all criticism that will come our way for the games we make, especially from our players, yada, yada, yada. Oh, here's the sentence they put in their response. One of their sentences says, "We don't see the value in tearing down one another, or we don't see the value in tearing down one another or one another's work." That's a weird sentence. "We don't believe articles that do that are making our industry and craft better." So they're saying basically Jason's writing is not productive.
You said this was BioWare who said this?
Yes, this is a...
Oh, that's fascinating, because that's interesting. Yeah. If you think about the grand scheme of BioWare, they have hundreds of employees, and he said 16 or 19 anonymous BioWare employees spoke to him about this.
Yes.
So that's really interesting, because originally I thought it was EA, and I was like, well, that's no surprise EA saying that, but if it was BioWare saying that, that's even more...
Yeah, I know it was BioWare, because Jason was like... Or, and like, the whole industry was kind of shocked on... Well, I saw everything on Twitter. It was just kind of like shocked that BioWare said this as a response, you know, when it kind of seems blatantly obvious from all the reporting that was done.
Maybe they're in the headspace. I mean, I can't speak for hundreds of individuals, but maybe collectively they're in the headspace of, hey, we know Anthem isn't perfect. We're going to improve it. Let us just do our thing. And then meanwhile, Jason releases this information based off of 16 personal accounts.
Well, sure. Yeah, I'm sure they're frustrated. They're like, man, we're
They probably just want to hunker down and do their thing. And yeah, meanwhile, Jason's like, destroyed. Look what's going on here.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't really have a side in this, because I appreciate the transparency that Jason provided. But I can see why, now that I'm reflecting on it, why BioWare overall would be kind of frustrated about it. But from an outsider's perspective, it's a very good read. It's entertaining, not necessarily in a good way, but it's an entertaining read just to be like, wow, this is fascinating. This is what happens there. Yeah. Just to hear about the development of a AAA game of that magnitude is really intriguing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if I was like for better or worse, BioWare, I guess I could understand how this would seem like we were being attacked as a studio. But at the same time, like, they've kind of been beaten up by the community itself, so they're kind of used to it already. So I don't know, like, how affected they really are by this article. I mean, yeah. I know, I think it was, you said his name earlier. He's one of the heads at BioWare.
Casey Hudson.
Yeah, Casey Hudson. I think he, like, tweeted out, or they had a response where they're going to, like, talk to their studio this week, and hopefully some good can come out of that. So for a brighter future, because I want to see BioWare making really great games again. And, you know, just as a new I guess I'm not a BioWare fan, but a new player of BioWare games, I haven't really had this experience that everyone used to talk about with Mass Effect. You know, like, I've never experienced that. I mean, I played, I guess I have. I have played KOTOR and KOTOR 2, so. But just in general, like, I never played Mass Effect. I don't know what's up with that. Is that my fault? Yeah. But, you know.
quick correction. Casey Hudson is the general manager of BioWare.
Yeah.
So I apologize. I think he may have left for a little while, but he's back now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's still there. It did bum me out in that article at one point. They're like, a Knights of the Old Republic was floated, but quickly canned. It's like, damn it.
Yeah, I know.
Because I would love that. I mean, I know, granted, one can say, well, we have the Old Republic. So I like the Old Republic, but I'd like a more linear. I didn't even like to be linear, but just story-focused RPG from BioWare would be cool. But they struggled with Andromeda. I don't know what they could do with Star Wars beyond that, because they aren't entirely different. But I don't know, man. Really interesting story. Like I said, I'd love to hear from the community on this and your opinions on Jason as a writer on choosing to release this information, if you think it was even remotely appropriate. Like I said, I don't really fall on either side. I'm glad that he released it because I really loved reading about it. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the situation overall and what you think the industry could look like going forward, or steps studios could take to reducing such a harrowing work schedule. Just overall, any details specifically, whether we talked about them or not, I'd love to hear from you guys. So please share your thoughts. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
But moving on to brighter news, Jacob, it appears that Assassin's Creed has been teased in The Division 2, presumably. It's not confirmed, but I think that's probably safe to assume. It makes sense to me, coming from Egypt, going to the Greek mythology and then on to Norse mythology, makes a lot of sense to me. Yes. So they're kind of hitting all the marks there. So I think that's probably a given. And it's odd because I've played a chunk of what's the Egyptian one called again?
Origins.
Yeah. I played a chunk of Origins. I played a chunk of Odyssey. I had to stop both because I ran out of time, which is no surprise. So I'll probably, if I'm lucky, play a chunk of this Norse Assassin's Creed. But I think that sounds super cool. And the chunks I played of both, specifically Odyssey, I really did have a lot of fun with. I just didn't have time to complete them, which is unfortunate. But
I didn't even start them.
If it's even as slightly good as Odyssey was, and what little I played of Odyssey, I think that Vikings-themed Assassin's Creed could be really awesome.
Can you imagine, like, big Viking ships? That's going to be so cool.
Yeah, big
cool.
Viking ships and, yes, like Viking armor and stuff and weapons, and just how in-depth the RPG systems were in Odyssey. Yes. I think that could be so cool in a Norse setting.
Skyrim.
Yeah, totally. And again, of course, God of War immediately comes to mind. Well, granted, God of War is nothing even remotely like Assassin's Creed in terms of gameplay, but I'm interested to see how Ubisoft could tackle Norse mythology differently from God of War, because God of War did it so effectively.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see their approach with it and in an Assassin's Creed settings. I think Ubisoft in many ways is really on fire right now, specifically with, of course, their updates of Siege. I know apparently a lot of people complain about Siege still, but I've enjoyed Siege in the past. Division 2 is doing really well. The past two Assassin's Creeds have been very well received. I hear Trials Fusion's okay, but I mean, I think overall just Ubisoft is doing a really good job. So I think Assassin's Creed, we have no reason not to look forward to whatever they do in a Viking setting, if it actually happens. But I think that's pretty exciting to speculate on. You have anything to add to that?
No, not really. I think the idea is kind of cool. I don't know if I'd even play that Assassin's Creed. I've kind of fallen out of the series, believe it or not. The games are too big now for me to really want to sink a lot of time into. I don't know. I'm always busy around when they come out and just never get around to them anymore. And it's not to say that I think they're bad games. I'm sure that I would really like playing them because I enjoy big open world games with lots of stuff to do. I truly do. But, as we get older, we have less time to play all the games. And those, unfortunately, are just the games that I've chosen to not play anymore.
Yeah, I get that, my friend. I get it.
But that is a cool idea for a game, Vikings.
Yeah. Speaking, this is super random. I won't dwell on it too long, but what just washed over me, speaking of open world games, is I am pretty freaking stoked to play Days Gone later this month.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to at some point, no doubt, for COG coverage, I would imagine, hopefully. But I would like to contribute to coverage for that game because I think it looks really cool and I've heard nothing but good things. And I'm glad to hear it because I for one, like many people, I was never concerned about it, but it never really grasped my attention entirely. But I think the marketing has been really strong for it, and word of mouth from people that have played it pretty extensively has been really positive. So I am pumped to see that we potentially have another hit PS4 exclusive headed our way. Hashtag not fanboys, but I'm pretty pumped for that, Jacob. What about you? Are you interested?
I haven't decided yet. I think it looks like a good game, but I don't know if I want to put the time into it, you know?
I understand that, Jacob. I have to pick and choose very wisely these days myself, and I think that's one I may indulge in.
Like, I've already bought 5 games this year. That's, like, insane how many games have come out already.
Right.
And like, those have all, like, I've enjoyed all of those, but I kind of just want to cool down a little bit, so I don't know if I want to jump into another game. Plus, I'm really enjoying Sekiro, and I might just play that multiple times.
Yeah, that's what sucks is that I keep acquiring games, and I'll play through a chunk of them. I'm like, I really need to finish this, and then the next thing will come along. I'm like, just kidding, I got to jump to the next one.
Yeah.
So I do have every intention of finishing Sekiro, because upon completing a majority of Bloodborne and then completing all of Dark Souls 3. I feel like I owe it to myself as a new fan of From Software to do my best to at least finish Sekiro once.
Yeah, it gets really good. So
yeah, I'm excited. Preston said even the story said it was really, really impressive as you progress through the game. So I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
But Days Gone, man. I'm pretty excited, dude.
Excited to ride that back.
That's what I'm pumped for. That I think it's the what I'm most excited for is the survival aspect of the game. Just sounds really cool to me. So and maintaining your old dirt scooter. So sick, brother. So sick. Borderlands 3 is an Epic Games exclusive on the old PC.
It is. And
it caused quite a ruckus this week, Jacob. It did. Quite a ruckus indeed. And it's funny. I'm bringing this up, and I have not read anything about it because I haven't even had time to get on Twitter for more than 5 seconds. So can you bring me up to speed on this? What's the latest with the Epic Games freakout? Is it just the same old, same old?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same problem as, like, anytime there's an Epic Games exclusive, people get mad about it because of the state of the Epic launcher in comparison to Steam in terms of like features and, you know, their alleged reputation towards consumers and their own interests, you know.
right. Yeah, I have the same response as always. It doesn't really make a difference to me. Again, I try to place myself in the shoes of those who care from what little I've read about this argument. And I can see to an extent where people are coming from, but it doesn't really make a difference to me because I'm just that laid back, I guess. So sue me.
Are you going to play this on Epic?
Yeah, I assume so. I definitely intend on playing anything that's even any form of a shooter. If I can play it on PC, I prefer to play it there from now on.
Yeah.
Because I'm a bastard like that. But I will probably be playing Borderlands 3, and I have no problem with it being on the Epic Games Store. That reminds me, I need to finish Metro. That is also on the Epic Games Store. And that's another game I need to play. I also need to play Devil May Cry, which I played the first mission of, and it blew my mind. So I need to get back to that as well.
Man, you got so many games.
Now, the summer's coming up, and I'm not in school, but I really want to fill my time with a lot of extra work doing something. I don't want to just sit around playing games all summer. I don't mean that in a bad way. I've reached a point in my life where I'm very intentional about what I want to do for a living, and I'm having to pursue it with every ounce of my being. And if I want to do that successfully, I got to just let games go for a while. But yeah. I think even in the midst of whatever I decide to do this summer, I should have a little more time to catch up on games. So in roughly 8 weeks, I will be able to start catching up on games, thankfully. Ooh, and I can contribute more to these conversations that predominantly you and Preston have that I feel like are far more engaging than anything I have to say. Because I'm typically just like, I'm tired. I'm sick. I'm too busy. So I'd love to say something other than that for once. That'd be great. But yeah. Other than that, Jacob, we have got nothing but old community questions, my friend. You want to jump into them?
Oh, God, I thought we'd never get into them.
Oh, Jacob, I'm so freaking stoked. Jacob, I'm so stoked that I would kiss you on the mouth right now, dude. Dude, don't tell anyone I said that, but I would straight up do that right now.
Okay, make sure you cut that out.
Oh, yeah, I'll cut it out, and I'll jump into community questions right now, okay?
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the community questions segment of the It's Obvious podcast, which is our favorite segment of the podcast because we are answering questions from you directly, and they always spice up the conversation here in the tail end of every episode. So thank you so much to each and every one of you who submit questions week in and week out to fuel this part of the podcast. Because honestly, it's my favorite, always has been, and can't thank you enough. It's always an honor and a pleasure. But if you'd like your questions read publicly on air while the mics are hot on this show or our additional show, Ask IOG, which we'll be back one day. You have my word. No specific date, but it will return in time, I promise. You can reach us in one of three places. You can email us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at @obvious_gaming or submit your questions in the Ask IOG section of our Discord channel. Now, all that being said, always include the hashtag #AskIOG so we know you want your questions read on the show. So I would hate to read a endearing private message to one of us publicly to quite a few people and just completely humiliate you and more so myself. So please include the hashtag #AskIOG. We would appreciate it. But all that being said, the first one comes from Nolan. He says, good morrow, Knights of the Gaming Universe.
Good morrow.
I hope all is well. I recently got back from Boston because I was so fortunate enough to go to PAX East. Oh, that's awesome. I waited almost 3 hours in line to be part of 3,000 people only allowed inside. It will be a memory I never forget. Borderlands was the first game I connected with my brother. And as the games grew, it became an emotional connection for me. I won't lie. Seeing that world reveal made me tear. So my question to y'all, is there a game out there that you connect with emotionally on that deep level? Always full love for you guys. Be safe, Nolan. Well, no, let me first say I'm jealous you got to go to PAX East because I've been to PAX West and it's always been a good time, but I've been eager to make it to Boston at some point, hopefully for PAX East one of these years. I think it'd be a lot of fun. But I hope you had a good time, man. And it's cool to hear that you and your brother connected through Borderlands, and more so that the trailer brought a tear to your eye. I can wholeheartedly relate to that, specifically with the reveal of me and Preston have said that this ad nauseum, but the reveal of Fallout 4, man, still to this very day, when I watch that reveal trailer, I still feel a flutter in my heart and a burn in my eyes because it meant that much to me at the time. And in a lot of ways, just it existing, say what you will about Fallout 4 in comparison to New Vegas and Fallout 3, but it still to this day means the world to me that that game even exists. And that reveal trailer gets me every time when the piano comes in. And it cuts to the protagonist and he's looking out on the horizon. He just looks at his dog and he's like, "Let's go, pal." And just cuts to the lightning bolt logo and it fades out to Fallout 4. Oh my gosh, man. And that final note on the keys, that chord, whatever chord that is like the tearjerker chord because it gets me every time. Yeah. So I can completely understand where you're coming from with Borderlands because Fallout 3 was had a huge impact on my life on 360 back in the day. And that's me and Preston have been best friends forever. But that game was really like a turning point in our gaming lives because we just poured our hearts and souls into playing that and talking on Xbox Live every single night, finding quests and exploring the world. So that game really had a huge impact on us.
Yeah. And you have those memories to go along with it.
He and I both had a very similar response to that trailer. So I totally get it, man. But what about you, Jacob?
Well, I'm going to go right back to WoW, just like I always do with anything significant on this podcast. That game, anytime there's a reveal, like of a new expansion, those cinematics just bring me back every time. Like, not only just like to the game in general, but just emotionally, like it just takes me back to all the memories I have of playing that game. And like, I remember one in particular when they announced Wrath of the Lich King, Garrett, that was the third expansion in WoW. I remember I was like, God, how old was I? I think it was like 13 or 14. I think we were starting high school or maybe it was like eighth grade. I don't know. But that was like, I was so happy. I'd never been that excited to play a game and like just playing it. I have so many memories going back to it. It's and like too many to even like retell. And I even have some of people that I used to play WoW with in our Discord now. Like I've brought them over from that community to this one. And I just, it's just crazy. Like actually meeting someone in a game and like still communicating with them after the fact, like even if neither of you are even playing the game anymore, it's just a cool experience. And I never I was like, when I was younger, I was too afraid to like admit that. Like I had online friends, like, cause I don't know, like playing video games, like when I was in high school, it wasn't like necessarily the cool thing until like people started playing Call of Duty and Halo. Like that's when video games kind of like became cool, I think. But it was never cool to play WoW in high school, so I never talked about it. And obviously I never told Garrett because we've talked about it before. And I should have told you because we could have played together.
You damn well should have, Jacob.
I let you down.
I still that still pisses me off to this day, you know. Actually, whenever WoW comes up in conversation, I always tell the tale of one of my best friends who secretly played WoW for years and never told me. And when he told us, he did not get the response I imagine you probably thought you would get. I was just mad that you didn't tell me because I would have played it the entire time with you.
Yeah, I thought I was just gonna get made fun of.
Yeah, no, I was like, what the hell?
I was like, what?
So yeah, like, I will never forget you telling us that. Shocked the world, man. Absolutely shocked the world. But thank you for sharing, Jacob. Can we go on a quick tangent real quick? I think it's worth going on.
Sure.
Okay, what did you think of the Joaquin Phoenix Joker trailer?
I thought it looks interesting. I think it looks better than Suicide Squad, just from a trailer alone. I'm happy to say that. I think it has a very interesting direction in terms of what the story they're going to be telling. And we've never really seen Joker like this, you know, like this is going to be It's going to be crazy seeing how he turns into the Joker, I guess. This is kind of an origin story, right?
Correct. I would say the closest obvious inspiration would be The Killing Joke, which does tell the origin of that.
Well, I mean,
Joker.
Like live action.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I mean, it's done. It's been done similarly in like the animated version of, say, Killing Joke, for example, which is mostly good, except for the first 30 minutes of that movie is super weird. But yeah, we've never seen it live action like this. Certainly not. And I think I've been a Joaquin Phoenix fan since I saw him in Signs. And now I've of course, seen him in stuff like Gladiator and Her and a bunch of other stuff he's done. But that movie he's in with the guy who passed away not too long ago, I can't remember his name, Philip C. Reilly, maybe. I think that might be his name. I could be wrong there. But he is just a truly phenomenal actor, and I am so excited. Just, of course, in the trailer, he looks outstanding, but I can't wait to see his full performance as Arthur Fleck, a.k.a. this version of Joker, play out on screen, especially in an 80s setting. I think is really unique, and just his design of or the design they've gone with this Joker, I think is really unique and really fitting of that time period specifically. Mm-hmm. And just his Joker laugh, some of his expressions, the way he's contorting his body and his mannerisms, and the way you can kind of see even in the story that his descent into total madness is really interesting. And everyone's talking about that one thing he writes in the paper that are like his joke he's working on for, I guess, his stand up act, where he says the crazy part about having a mental illness is that people expect you to pretend like you don't. So I think that's pretty impactful. Now, I can't relate to having a mental illness. At least I don't think I do. But I think that's a unique take on it, considering how mental illness is or just mental health in general is a hot topic these days. So to place that in an 80s setting and tackle that thematically, I think it's just a cool idea. And just that top comment that just keeps appearing on every single version of this trailer is just back in the day, throw Joker into a vat of acid, have him become the Joker. But nowadays, just throw him into society. And that's very much the direction they've taken with this movie. Uh-huh. And I like that we see Thomas Wayne on screen at one point addressing, you know, why would someone be a coward and run around in a mask? And we see, what's his name? Taxi Driver. Meet the Fockers. What's his name? He's the guy that came out on stage at whatever event. He's like, fuck you, Trump. Fuck you, buddy. That's what I remember him for now because it was so ridiculous. What's his name? I'm going to have to look it up, man. Also, an amazing actor. Taxi Driver. Why can't I remember his name? He's so famous. He's in The Irishman, too, coming out. Robert De Niro. There he is. He is also in the film. And it's interesting. I watch Grace... I can't remember her last name, but she's the Beyond the Trailers girl on YouTube, does really, really awesome reviews and industry coverage of movies. And she's just saying that this movie clearly draws inspiration from Taxi Driver, which I think is interesting because De Niro was the lead in Taxi Driver. And she was giving examples, not only visually, but thematically, how this movie falls in line with Taxi Driver and is clearly drawing inspiration from it. And I think it's clear as day, which is also exciting. Taxi Driver is awesome. And I think just overall, I think the fact that it's a DC property, it's Joker, Joaquin Phoenix, and the inspirations it's drawing from, I think it's just super exciting. The trailer is really impressive, so I'm hoping the final product delivers on the promise of the trailer because Todd Phillips, I think it's Todd Phillips, not Todd McFarlane. One sec. Todd Phillips Joker, yeah. Because he's directed stuff that's not even remotely like this film, which is really interesting. So that's why I think it's going to be a really turning point for his career. Because, you know, he directed Hangover, War Dogs, Old School, stuff like that. So this is very clearly different from that. So it looks like more art housey. I like how it has a lower budget. It almost looks sort of like an indie film. I think that's very fitting for this style of movie, too.
I kind
of
got that vibe, too.
So I'm pumped, man. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that because I didn't want to forget about it. And I'd love to hear the community's thoughts, too.
Yeah, leave them in the comments below,
please. But guys, forgive us for the tangent. The next one comes from Georgia T. Georgia T says, hello, bye. Here's a quickie. Do you get tilted by games? If yes, how often does it happen to you? And what are the things you do to cool off? I personally don't get it often, but I got tilted as hell by Hollow Knight, which reminded me that I really hate it as a feeling. Keep it up, or keep up the good work, lads. Georgie T, thank you so much, my friend. I was just recently tilted for the first time, I kid you not, in possibly 5 or 6 years at the very least, playing Sekiro of all things. No surprise there, but I smashed a controller for the first time in many years, and I damaged a new piece of furniture my parents so gracefully and kindly provided for me in my new apartment, and I massacred it.
Have they seen it yet?
Granted, it's not destroyed. It's just one part of it, but I am mad at myself for damaging it because it was very generous of them to purchase it for me. Yeah. And now it's soiled by my rage, and my controller also feels very fat in my hand because one of the handles is completely cracked open. But, yeah, I've almost broken a controller. I know Preston said I think he broke one in half playing Sekiro before he got used to the gameplay. But Sekiro set me off, man. And the only reason why is because I was reviewing it at the time. And it's one thing to play the game and have all the time in the world and just get stressed because it's pissing you off. But I was stressed because I only had 3 days to review the damn thing.
Yeah.
So that was what was pissing me off, is the stress of having to complete it in a certain amount of time. So imagine playing Sekiro with a literal timer. That's what I felt like. So that's why it sent me over the edge for the first time in a long time. Typically, I'm able to maintain and control my rage playing games. And honestly, most games don't piss me off like they used to, but that one really got to me big time.
Yeah. I think that's why, like, all these reviewers and, like, the media, you heard about all these, like how all these articles came up about how, like, reviewers were complaining about how hard Sekiro was and that it should be made easier. There should be like an easy mode.
Yeah.
You heard about all that, right?
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that, by the way? Do you think like games should be made more accessible, like even hard games like Sekiro?
I think the only argument that I can understand would be for gamers who are physically disabled in some way, who really want to enjoy From Software's games and be able to play them easier. Now, one can also argue like, well, sorry, like, you can't make, I mean, honestly, well, you can make games for specific fan bases and specific audiences, but I feel like at the end of the day, the artist is in control of what they're creating. And if they choose to make a game that kicks your ass, then by all means, they're more than welcome to do that. I don't feel like they should feel obliged to cater to any particular audience just so they can play it. I can see the argument there. I think overall, I don't think they should feel obliged to include an easy mode, because I think their game is the game they decided to make, and take it or leave it at the end of the day, honestly.
Yeah. And their games have always been like that.
And this one is very much, I think, collectively, everyone can agree, their most difficult game to date, because the combat really is just that demanding.
Well, I don't know. Like, I think if you get used to the combat in this game, it might be easier, because you can kind of just...
Maybe. Let me rephrase that. Maybe not the most difficult, but certainly the most demanding of you as the player.
That's an especially the learning curve of it.
So, because there's been proof. I mean, people across the internet, including our very own John Poobah, is able to say that he mastered the combat and can breeze through the game like it's nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's inspiring, because I have still struggled because I've not been able to play consistently in weeks. And whenever I pick up the controller again, it is truly awful. So I'm hoping I can reach that point, but I don't even know the full argument. Are people arguing that From Software should put an easy mode in the game, or are they just saying like they would like that going forward, or it should just be in the discussion?
I think this all started from a writer from either Kotaku or Polygon. I think it was Kotaku. Just wrote an article about how, like, I think it was like an opinion piece about how there should be an easy mode in Sekiro. And that like sparked this whole like argument within, you know, social media and just, you know, the video game, you know, chatterbox, whatever you want to call it, just of people like, you know, on both sides, like saying, no, you don't change how they make their games. We like that they're hard, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, they got the other side. They're like, yeah, I wish I could enjoy these games just like everyone else, but I can't handle how hard it is. And it's just a lot of people voicing their opinions. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on it really quick.
Yo, but
I'm on the same side as you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Before we continue this discussion, it's actually the perfect segue into the next two questions. I'm going to read those now. The first one comes from Wamblam 53. He says, Hey, gorgeous lump nuggets. I like that one. I am a proud lump nugget.
Wait, hold on. I didn't say if games tilted me in the last question.
Do they? Yes.
Anytime I get super frustrated, like I have a bad night in like Apex or a multiplayer game, I get super bad. And then obviously when I play a Souls game, I'm going to rage. That's just inevitable.
Yeah, of course.
It's part of the experience.
What's going to be the new term? It can't be Soulsborne anymore. Is it going to be Sekiro Allsborn or Soulsbornico? That's what it'll be. That's very much a evolution of the Soulsbornico formula.
Well, do you think they make Bloodborne too, Garrett?
I would certainly hope so, but I got to be honest, man, even though I haven't mastered the combat, I think I enjoy the combat far more than any Soulsbornico game I've played before. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that they expand even further on the combat they developed in Sekiro and apply that to a new setting and a new world. Now, I am totally infatuated with the world they created with Bloodborne, but if I'm just going to be dodge rolling and hacking and slashing things, I think I can still enjoy it because, like I said, I was playing Bloodborne days prior to Sekiro, and I still really enjoyed it. And I think going back to it, I would still have fun with it. So they stick to their old school method of combat in Bloodborne 2, sure. But I think it'd be interesting if they applied Sekiro's combat to a Bloodborne sequel in some way. I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's parrying in Dark Souls, sure.
Yeah, and, yeah, but not nearly too? To the extent of Sekiro, obviously.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. I would hope that they would develop a Bloodborne sequel. If they're going to do three Dark Souls, at least do two Bloodbornes. Yeah. That'd be
I think they do
much appreciated. Yeah. But Wamblam continues and says, so I know you guys enjoy the ever-living shit out of Sekiro, and I wanted to know who the hardest boss y'all have had to face yet in the whole Soulsbornico. Oh, that's hilarious, dude. He says Soulsbornico. I didn't even read that yet. Wamblam, I promise on my life I'm not ripping you off, dude, because I had not read this question right up until I mentioned that we had two Sekiro. I just saw Sekiro, but I did not see Soulsbornico. You and I are tied at the heart, my friend. That's amazing. Soulsbornico series is. Also, side note, if you aren't listening to the Shogun album by Trivium while playing Sekiro, are you even really playing Sekiro? You know, honestly, I've heard Trivium's music, but I've not heard Shogun by them, so now I got to listen to it. I love me some metal, obviously. Hardest boss I have played, I mean, it's kind of a cop-out because I don't think it's even remotely the hardest boss in the game based on what Preston's told me, but Lady Butterfly slaughtered me for a long time.
Yes, she's tough.
Yeah, but I've heard there are many bosses that are far more difficult than her. And one of them I experienced for myself, and it wasn't even a main boss, and it was so hard.
Which one was it?
It was the guy at the top of the tower, and I can't remember what region, but he does that really quick attack that's like up, down really fast. And it kind of just teaches you to parry before you go fight the main boss of the game again.
Oh, you're talking about the samurai guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, once you learn a trick to him, he's really easy.
Yeah. So, in my experience, Lady Butterfly, but I know that is not factual. I know there are harder bosses, but for me, it's been Lady Butterfly. What about you, Jacob?
Folding screen monkeys.
Oh, those guys.
No, that's a joke. That's the cakest boss in the game. It's literally like a stealth mission, but actually the boss after that is the boss I just beat, and that was the hardest boss for me. It is the guardian ape, and like, you do you want me to spoil the fight for you? Like, I mean, it's kind of a spoiler for me to talk about the fight. I don't know.
No, I don't mind. Man, you can go for it.
I mean, you guys should be past this anyway at this point. I'm playing the game very slowly, but basically you jump into this little open pooled area with some burnt down trees, and you fight this giant ape. He's a big ape. He is very difficult. He's like, at first it was very hard for me to read his attacks, but I eventually got it down and I killed him. He only had one execute. I kill him, I slice his head off. He literally gets back up, picks his head up, and takes the spear out of his body that was stabbed.
Oh, this guy. Yeah, I watched Preston fight this guy,
and he turns into the headless ape. That thing destroyed me for at least an hour, and it demoralized me, but I eventually beat him on my stream yesterday, which was Sunday, and we got him down. But I know something that happens, and yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. That's all I'll say.
I hope he was tough. Prevail.
Up until that point, Genichiro was pretty tough for me. Like, I could get past his first phase, but once he got to that lightning phase, he was tough, man.
I oddly beat him pretty quickly. I don't know how. Maybe I just lucked out, but
yeah. See, I struggled because I didn't know you could jump when he did his lightning and it would reflect the damage back at him. I didn't know that was a thing.
Right.
But someone told me that, and I like watched someone else do it in a video, and I was like, oh my God.
Was it my video?
No.
Okay.
I should watch your video, though.
Yeah, my video's out there.
Was this in your review?
No, it was just a standalone gameplay video I put out on COG's YouTube channel.
Gotcha.
So, those are our hardest bosses. Wham, blam. Thank you for your question, my friend. Kyle writes in, Bohongales, Bohongales, and says, well, fellas, it's upon us. The end times. There has been some discussion revolving around Sekiro and if the game should have an easier difficulty. What do you guys think? Kyle, forgive me. We've literally just had this discussion, but I'm reading your question anyway. I think these games journalists are confusing the intentions these Souls games are putting out. If they do manage to get them to get From to shift and add an easier mode, which I highly doubt, it should be titled Game Journalist Mode. And that would just make me giddy. Hope you all are having a great day, and my love goes out to all three of you in your everyday lives. Stay awesome and watch Rising of the Shield Hero and Promised Neverland. Please, they have my waifu and kids. Kyle, I'm sorry we already had this discussion, but I think naming it Games Journalist Mode sounds great, man. I think that sounds hilarious. That'd be awesome. But I'd like to see them stick to their guns. Whenever it's a just cause, I'd like to see people stick to their guns.
Yeah.
Is it a just cause? I don't know. But if it's something that I feel like isn't that big of a deal, I think they should stick to their guns.
Nothing quite gives you the satisfaction that you get from these games when you kill a boss. And I think cheapening that by making it easier would take away from the game.
Yeah, I fully agree with that, because the few bosses I've beaten, I practically leap out of my seat with joy. Partially due to relief, but also because I feel like a total badass for beating them successfully.
Yeah, I mean, so. For me, the Soulsborne Kiro games have always they've always been about not only the world and how fun it is to just explore it, but also just the interesting bosses that they come up with. And if you take, you know, the fun out of the bosses and the toughness out of it, then you just have the world, and that can get dull if depending how you enjoy these games.
I second the notion, my friend. Let's cap this whole.
And plus, that affects reviews.
Okay.
If they're playing, like, if they're playing something that's not going to be reflective of how you're going to play it, then, you know, is that review even worthwhile? Yeah.
I agree. I totally agree. And you know what makes me laugh sometimes, Jacob?
What?
Sometimes when your thoughts come to you, it reminds me of the frog scene in Shrek 3 when he dies like over and over and over and over again. And each time they think it's over and they're going to move on, but he comes back to life again.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like sometimes when you're processing your thoughts. Sometimes they come late. Because I'm like ready to transition and you're like, also, by the way. Yeah. But it's totally okay. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts as always, my friend. Is there anything else you want to get out there before I move on?
No, I'm done now.
Okay, cool. Scarlet Speedster himself, Sam Harris, writes in and says, here's a weird one, gentlemen. To clarify, this question comes from a refrigerator magnet. It says, quote, when a dog wags its tail and barks at the same time, which end do you believe? Pretty thought-provoking, huh? Have a fantastic week and watch Rising of the Shield Hero by order of the first anime ambassador of IOG. So I really need to get to watching this, I guess. I'm probably going to finish Love, Death, and Robots. Or Robots Love. What is it called on Netflix?
I think it's Love, Death, and Robots, right?
Yeah, it's the most obnoxious ad I've ever seen in my life. Every time I see it, I want to bust my face through a wall.
That's why I haven't watched it yet.
I know, it's very stupid annoying. Stupid ad. But I was intrigued because David Fincher was involved, and the animation is gorgeous. Now, some of the shorts I've seen have not been as interesting as some of the others, but I'm getting through it, so I'll probably finish that, and maybe I'll jump into Rising of the Shield Hero next. Who knows? I'd like to have a show to fall asleep to every night, so I may do that next, because it's been bashed in my head now. I can't get it out.
Yeah, you hear that? He's going to sleep to your show, Kyle. Yeah. And Sam.
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep my eyes open while I watch it.
I'm going to get to Rising of the Shield Hero after I finish One Punch Man.
How you liking that?
It's good. It's very good. I haven't watched it regrettably in about a week, but okay. I was really enjoying it. I need to get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I encourage you to finish it, because it is by far one of my favorites.
Yeah. Nothing has stopped him yet.
Nothing yet. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see if anything happens.
He's still one punching stuff.
I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the remainder of the first season. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we all aren't morbidly disappointed by season 2, because that trailer did not blow my mind, or anyone's mind for that matter, it seems.
It seems like everyone's concerned about it. Like, is it just the animation looks bad or what?
Yeah, it's mostly that. Hopefully it was just a bad trailer. I don't know, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't have high hopes, I'll say that. But to address Sam's question, when a dog wags its tail and barks at the same time, which end do you believe?
Probably the tail.
It depends on what the dog's barking at, because I've seen this scenario play out my whole life, because I've been around dogs my whole life. I've seen dogs bark joyfully and wag their tails to my arrival, or of my arrival somewhere. I've seen dogs bark and wag their tails because they want food. I feel like if they're wagging their tail and barking, it's almost always a good thing. So I'd say I believe that they're wagging their tail because they're joyful and they're barking because they want something. Sorry, I'm not even talking into the mic. I'm scratching my eyeball.
No, it makes sense to me.
Yeah,
you gotta believe that tail.
I believe it's a joyful animal. I will say that. Now, I wag my tail when I bark, too. Specifically when I see Jacob in the nude, I bark like a mad dog. It's like I have rabies. I'm salivating from the mouth and my tail is just wagging.
My front tail wags when I see you.
Vigorously. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that situation. But Jacob, I don't think I have anything else to add tonight. I have a ton more crap I have to get to, unfortunately.
Oh, I guess I'm not good enough for you then.
What's that?
Guess I'm not good enough for you then.
No, Jacob, you're perfect, man. I was just talking about how attractive.
No, actually, you know what? Something just came up. I gotta go. Sorry.
Oh, perfect, man. I got to get out of here too. But it was nothing short of a pleasure. I love you to bits.
Had a pleasure talking to you again. We need to get you playing some games, man.
In time, roughly 8 weeks. I think I'm gonna intentionally take a week off to just recuperate, play some games, and just sleep for a week because I need it so badly.
Yes, I hope you take care of yourself.
Yeah, I need to, because I'm gonna wind up losing my mind one of these days, and that's the last thing I want, because I don't have time for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. No one does.
Yep. But Jacob, seriously, I love you so much. Thank you for joining me across the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed this episode, please let us know your thoughts in the comments below on YouTube or on Discord. Reach out to us on all those other platforms to submit Ask IOG questions. And please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes/Apple Podcast if you're willing, because it helps us grow. We'd love to reach a wider audience to just continue growing this wonderful community we've built with you guys. It really means the world to us. And we look forward to hearing from you on all the things we discussed and more. But I hope you all have a very blessed week. I apologize again for bringing this episode to you guys a day late. And you were loved and cherished. And we love you all, seriously. So thank you so much for your continued support. And this has been episode 197. We'll catch you again very soon.
Thank you guys for listening. Bye-bye.